Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 20th of May, 2014. On the call today, we have Steve Medelis, Volker Grimmon, Justin Macy, Libby Bainey, Holly Raich, Sarah Wild, Chris Pelling, Paul McGrady, Jennifer Standiford, Alex Deacon, James Bladell, Kathy Kleiman, Val Sherman, Tim Ruiz, Don Horton, McKaylee Nylon, Laura Jadid, Susan Prosser, Kieran Maltrinovovo, and Griffin Barnett. We have apologies from Graham Bunton, Darcy Southwell, Tobias Sattler, Maria Farrell, Christian Dawson, and Don Blumenthal. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, Joe Catapano, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Steve.
Okay, thank you. This is Steve Metalitz. In the absence of our chair or the other co-chair, I've been asked to chair this meeting. So welcome, everybody. We have an agenda that you should see on the upper right-hand part of your screen. At least that's where I see it. I guess I'll first ask if anybody has any changes in statement of interest to report. Okay. Hearing none, what we have proposed here is the agenda is to look at the draft that was circulated by Don yesterday for a preliminary conclusion on actually three questions, the new threshold question that was added to Section C regarding who should be allowed to use proxy services under the accreditation. C1, which deals with the purpose of the use, and C2, which deals with the kind of restates the character of the use or of the user. So you have on your screen there the was circulated yesterday, and it basically, if I can sum it up, but of course this is open for discussion. Either now or on the list as we go forward, it basically says that there seems to be agreement on the threshold question in C2, which really go to which entities should be allowed to register as or use proxy and privacy services. There's disagreements on C1. Which I think are summarized there. So let me just open the floor. If there are people who have comments on this now, I know it was just circulated yesterday, but if there are comments on it now, we can briefly go through those. Otherwise, I would encourage people to look at this and to communicate on the list your support or not for this preliminary conclusion. Does anybody wanted to speak on it now? Okay, I see Libby and Volker. So Libby, go ahead.
Thanks. Can you all hear me?
Yes, can you identify yourself for the transcript?
Sure. This is Libby Bainey. I'm just wanted to put a note out there for the group's consideration because I'm struggling with the term overwhelming majority as used in the document, and I'd like to get some feedback from the rest of the working group on the definition of that term. It's unclear to me how that is defined, if it's by number of people or types of stakeholder groups. But it seems to me, at least based on last week's discussion, that there was, you know, a lack of consensus, if I can use that term, or maybe just disagreement about how to proceed on some of these issues, and certainly on C2. And so I'm not sure if I feel comfortable with the terms overwhelming majority, though I recognize there's a disagreement within the group, and maybe noting that there's a lack of consensus or there's divergent views on the issue would be more appropriate rather than an overwhelming majority, unless that's a defined term that I'm unaware. And I ask that to the group: is overwhelming majority defined, and if not, I propose we use something less forceful.
Okay, thank you, Libby. Volker, go ahead.
Thank you, Steve. With regard to the overwhelming majority thing, I think this is currently mainly a placeholder for what the direction the group is taking has. Until we have a formal vote on the matter, I don't think we know where we stand as a group, where the position is. So I think leaving this there for the time being points out where we think we are, but we should not use the defined terms at this point before we really decide on what the positions are and what the outcomes of our membership of the group are, to use the defined terms of GNSO policy, because that might be premature. One question I do have with regard to the threshold question, though, is by phrasing it the way it is, as in the privacy proxy services being available to companies, non-commercial organizations, and individuals, isn't that a bit too narrow? Shouldn't we just say are available to everyone, every entity? I think that reflects the current status very much better than saying listing these three cases that may be all inclusive but may not be.
Okay. Thank you, Volker. James and then Christina.
Hi, James speaking for the record. Thanks, Steve. I'm going to agree with Libby and Kieran in that I don't think that the phrase overwhelming majority is a defined term or is even appropriate. I think that what we can do, however, is we can look to the GNSO designations for the various levels of consensus and working groups. I think Marika circulated those. I think that we have, and she's posting some things in the chat here as well, but I think there are some things like full consensus, obviously not there, but something like rough consensus or strong minority or whatever. And that can, I think that can help tee up selecting those. Maybe it's a little too premature, but at least we can start to lay the groundwork for, a minority statement. Because I think that is one of the mechanisms that's used to highlight when we have divergent opinions that fall short of full consensus. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, James. Christina, then Tim.
Thanks. I agree with both Libby and James. I would suggest that while I understand the point that Volker's making in the chat, I do think we need to start moving towards using the working group guidelines definitions. Having said that, it seems to me that we might not necessarily be in a position where we can confirm that we've received input from all the working group members such that we can make any kind of characterization one way or the other. And I say that because I know that I myself have not yet weighed in on this issue. And I would find, I find myself in the kind of agreeing with the sentiments characterized in the paragraph, however a minority of working group members disagreed, et cetera. That view is definitely consistent with my own. So it would seem to me that perhaps we don't necessarily need to do a vote, but just ensure that all members of the working group have in fact weighed in before we start making any determinations of the level of support.
Okay, this is Steve. Let me just interject here that we've been discussing the use of this phrase overwhelming majority, and that phrase does not apply to what to the characterization that that Christina just mentioned. It's used that statement is contrasted with a majority of working group members. If you look at the preceding paragraph, overwhelming majority is used twice in this. And maybe we could focus on the places where it is used. And first is in the paragraph that begins, an overwhelming majority of working group members believe that proxy privacy services should continue to be available to companies, non-commercial organizations, and individuals. I think there's some typos there, but I think that's what that says. That's use number one. Use number two is at the end where it says, with the foregoing in mind, it seems that the overwhelming majority of the working group believes that the answer to C2 is no, and question C2 again, should use of privacy proxy services be restricted only to registrants who are private individuals using the domain name for non-commercial purposes? So let's focus on that, because I think the question C1, it is presented quite differently in this draft. So if we can focus on this question of whether that really goes to the entity that could use privacy and proxy services. Should it continue to be available to all types of entities, as was mentioned before, or should it be restricted only to registrants who are private individuals? That maybe if we focus on that, that would help to sharpen our view here. I think Tim is next, and then Kieran.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That was my comment as well, I guess, in general, because if I understood our last discussion correctly, an overwhelming majority did believe that privacy and proxy services should be available to all entities. I thought that's what John said. I thought that's what Libby said. Of course, then they later qualified their comments with, when it got down to the use of a private domain name and how that should be used. Now, if it's being used for commercial purposes, then they had a different view. So from my understanding, there was no, I didn't hear hardly any, if there may have been some, but I don't recall any dissent at all with the comment that, or the thought that the proxy privacy services should be available to all entities. So I think that's what that paragraph's referring to, and maybe the last sentence of the second use of the term majority, you know, there might be some question there that some might have where it starts talking about the use. But in that first paragraph, I think if everyone rereads that as you suggest, they might have a different view of that. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Kieran, and then Kathy.
This is Kieran for the transcript. I agree with Christina's statements, particularly that a lot of the members of the working groups and actually a lot of the constituencies that I work with anyway are still trying to formulate their official position on this as the discussion unfolds. And I know that there's been some preliminary positions put forth earlier in response to the questionnaire. But again, there's a lot of us that are still trying to figure out what our answer really is on this. And I don't think that the use of the word overwhelming majority, the context of it really matters at this point, because, you know, for that reason, because, yeah, okay, so on the call, there were a number of us who said yes or said no, but like Christina said, there are still people that are weighing in. It's still not an appropriate term to use until we've actually received all the input and analyzed it and you know, taken stock of the position in the way that it's been laid out. And even if I do agree that entities is not the question, but rather use may be, then, you know, I still am going to stick to my guns and say that whatever side of the issue I end up on, overwhelming majority is not appropriate. Number of voices is not what we're looking at here, and that's what the GNSO guidelines set forth. So those are my two cents, and I'm happy to continue this on the list as well, since we've spent so much time on this issue. Thanks.
Hey, Kathy?
Hi. Thanks, Steve. Good morning, everybody, or good evening, everybody. Okay, I think here's my thought, is that we should add some detail. Why not go ahead and add some of the input we've gotten from the stakeholder groups at this point to talk about whether we keep the term overwhelming majority or not, and I actually think it's somewhat accurate. Why don't we add some detail about who's come in officially or unofficially with statements? And provide some background. I think it's still too early, I agree with Volker, too early to classify this according to the special GNSO guideline terms, because I don't think we're there yet. But now, why not add some more details so that we can reflect what we've heard and who, in some cases, what stakeholder groups we've heard it from. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Marika, I think that's a new hand.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note, to Kathy's point, of course, you know, this language is supposed to go into the template eventually when, you know, once there's agreement on how it should be worded. And the template itself includes already as well the responses to the survey as well as the statements that were received from constituencies and stakeholder groups. So, and it also, you know, has aimed to capture some of the discussion and we may link to some of the conversation that were held on the mailing list on this as well. So I think some of that eventually will be captured in the template where this section is supposed to fit in.
Okay, that's a good point. This is in context. It's not it's at the end of a something that includes those other statements. Tim, is that a new hand or is that an old hand?
Old hand, sorry, I'll put it down.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, well, we've spent quite a while on this. Let's continue this on the list, but let me urge people to actually read this carefully and see where this phrase that people don't like or some people don't like is being used and to suggest a change to it. I do think that this statement tries to distinguish between C and C2, or threshold and C2 on the one hand and C1 on the other hand. So those are different questions where I think there was a very different, my sense is there's rather different split within the group. So I encourage people to look at that and to they can, to sharpen their views, because I also, you know, if you look back through through the statements that are in the template already coming from individuals and then later statements, they don't always line up. So let's ask people to look this over and put in your suggestions on the list and see if we can come to a conclusion on it by next week. Our next agenda item is C3. This is asking the question there asks, should there be a difference in the data field to be displayed if the domain name is registered or used for a commercial purpose or by a commercial entity instead of a natural person? And again, we have the template that is in front of you has some of the questions that have been identified, some of the discussion, the statements that came in from the constituencies and other groups prior to this, and then we don't have a conclusion based on this. I mean, in some ways, it's a little difficult to. I guess if your answer is that a domain name that's registered or used for a commercial purpose shouldn't be eligible for privacy or proxy services, then this question is kind of irrelevant because, you know, there shouldn't be, you know, should there be a difference in the data fields to be displayed? So it might be useful to focus on the second part of this. Should there be a difference in the data fields to be displayed if the domain name is registered by a commercial entity instead of a natural person? And I say that because, again, my perception is that there is more support for the proposition that a commercial entity should not be per se excluded from using privacy proxy services. I will say that is clearly the viewpoint of my constituency. But I think it is also reflected in the discussions that we've had and statements in the white paper and so forth that was circulated. So let me open the floor for comments on this question C3, and we'll take a cue. I've got James and McKaylee. James, go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. James speaking for the transcript. And I just wanted to interject and point out one practical or technical reality that we should keep in mind when looking at this question, regardless of how we ultimately answer it or what our conclusions are. We should bear in mind that the privacy proxy service does not necessarily control the format of who is or the different data fields that are or are not displayed or the structure of the output. They can, you know, so we could, for example, construct guidelines about what information they put into the who is record, but they would not have the ability to make, you know, really radical alterations to what's displayed. they would have to use the existing fields in the existing format. So I just wanted to make sure that we were all synchronized on that one point. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, James. McKaylee?
Hi, McKaylee from the transcript. What James said, yeah, I totally agree with, obviously. In the EWG, we've been looking at, you know, an entirely different paradigm with respect to both the collection and potential display of registration information. So I think, you know, within that context, yeah, grand. You know, if you want to have an extra field for whatever purpose, as long as that purpose is, you know, reasonable, so be it. The only concern I would have is whether or not this is a mandatory field or an optional field. You know, that's I think is where it becomes a kind of an interesting thing. I mean, you know, for example, if as a business you feel that your website should be 100% secure, you optionally get a digital certificate. You optionally sign up to have your website scanned for pen tested and do all sorts of these other things. And, you know, you can do lots of things there. But, I mean, is the question here making this mandatory or just, you know, potentially having that as an option that it could exist? I mean, that's my real question is, I mean, where does this stand? I mean, at a technical level, yeah, fine, but if it's obligatory or simply a matter of choice, then that would have quite a bit of a difference as far as I'm concerned. Thanks.
Thank you. That's a good point, McKaylee. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, it's Kathy Kleiman, and not responding to McKaylee. He's given me something to think about with these optional fields. Raising some general questions. One is this concept of data fields displayed. We're talking about proxy and privacy services, so the fields that are displayed, I think James mentioned it, but I'd gotten into the queue to talk about this also. We're going to be, for a proxy service, for example, we're going to be displaying the fields of the proxy service provider. So I don't understand about the data fields because I'm not sure it's going to reveal anything. The other is I wanted to point out that for a number of people on the call, the lines are very clear. You know, large brand holders versus individuals. You know, this may be fairly clear, but in my world, the vast majority of registrants that I deal with register domain names for uses that change and morph and grow and divide over time. So that KathyKleiman.com, for example, mine, is used for business purposes and personal purposes and hobby purposes and education purposes and research purposes. And this is true for that whole area of evolving small businesses, senior-owned businesses, mom-owned businesses, entrepreneurs. There are many, many, many gray areas. And so where that line is, and then penalizing people because they registered their name and the use has shifted over time, this seems to me to be an unbelievable burden. So I would say no, there shouldn't be a difference in the fields displayed because I think it would get very ambiguous and very difficult. Thanks. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. McKaylee, is that a new hand?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, just in following up on Kathy's thing around the data fields, Kathy, this is more of a technical thing in that regardless of how a domain name is registered, certain data fields would appear in the WHOIS output. So whether the domain name is registered to me as a private individual and under the current paradigm, all my personal data is published. Thank you, ICANN. If it's for me as a private individual, for a company, if it's registered via privacy, registered via proxy, registered via a lawyer or whatever, you know, the data fields, be that, you know, registrant name, organization, all of those fields are going to be the same. What goes into the fields obviously is going to change. So if you have a domain name registered via, let's pick on GoDaddy, domains by proxy, then the domains by proxy contact details populate it, not my personal details. So I think what this is in relation to potentially, I mean, Steve, correct me if I misunderstood this, would be to add another data field into the WHOIS output across the board. Because otherwise I can't see how it would work. So I can't see how you would add a data field just for domains that are registered via proxy or privacy service. Thanks.
Okay. Kathy, did you want to respond?
Yeah, I did, just because I think that's outside our scope. We're looking at, and I appreciate the clarification from McKaylee, but we're talking about registration and proxy privacy services, so I don't see how it's within our scope. I know it's within EWG scope, but how it's within our scope to add a data field to the whole of the who is. What I would think is the scope of question three is whether we're adding a field for domain names that are registered in proxy privacy services. And it seems to me we're converging that the answer is no. Thanks.
Thank you. Let me just offer two comments here, and then if there's others who want to speak on this, we'll keep that queue going briefly. First, I think McKaylee made an important point about, and others, about optional versus mandatory. So we're talking here about, throughout C, we're talking about what would be the accreditation standard. So even if the accreditation standard were, that anybody could use a privacy and proxy service, let's say, any registrant could use that, that still wouldn't prevent an individual privacy and proxy service from having a different, a more rigorous rule and saying, no, we won't accept registrations from legal entities, or we won't accept registrations for commercial purposes. I think that describes, as we heard a few months ago, some of the privacy proxy services that exist today, proxy services. So it is important that we're talking here about what would be the minimum standards in effect. And so there could be some variation as long as you're consistent with that minimum standard. So that's the first point. The second point is, I think when this is phrased as difference in data fields, as in is there an additional field, I think it's hard to answer yes to that because the data fields are not necessarily within our remit. But another way to interpret this, and I'm just throwing this out to see whether this might be what was meant by this question, is that you'd have to fill it in differently. So, for example, if you believe that some people might take the view that if a commercial entity registers in a proxy service, that the fact that a legal entity is registering there should be clear from the result. So where now you simply have in the proxy setting the name of the proxy service, you might have as an accreditation standard that it be the name of the proxy service - legal entity or something like that. I mean, I don't know if that's a difference in the data field or it's actually a difference in the data, but that's one way to interpret this question as saying that even if a legal entity as opposed to a natural person is allowed to use a proxy service, that fact ought to be known to people consulting who is. So that's just another potential way of looking at this question. Again, I'm not putting forward a viewpoint. I'm just trying to interpret this question in a way that allows for possible range of answers. So McKaylee and Volker are in the queue. Anybody else want to get in the queue? Please raise your hand. McKaylee, go ahead.
Well, first off, are you saying that the proxy privacy would output their name - legal entity, exactly those words, or - the name of the legal entity? I'm just trying to clarify what you're suggesting there.
My hypothetical, it would be that it would say - legal entity, so that the...
Okay, so it wouldn't specify the legal entity's actual name.
Maybe not, because otherwise you have what I think we're defining as a privacy service, where the registrant's name is displayed.
No, that's fine. I'm just trying to understand what you're suggesting, first off. I mean, I'm opposed to it for a multitude of reasons, but I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. I mean, the way I look at this is, if I go to a website and I want to order goods and services, and I want to contact that website, the who is not going to be the first point of call. I'm going to go to the Contact Us page or the About Us page. I might look at the Terms and Conditions page. You know, I find it quite confusing where there's this kind of assumption that lots of people are using Whois all the time. Now, sure, people on this call obviously are, because some of you are paid to do it, some of you end up doing it because, well, you kind of end up having to do it, and some of us are involved in selling goods and services around domain names and internet stuff in general. But I'm still having a kind of a difficulty understanding why this kind of thing needs to be so kind of, I don't know, so heavily highlighted in Whois when it's only going to be looked at by a very small number of people to begin with. Whereas if I'm not comfortable buying something from a website, I'll go somewhere else. Or if I feel comfortable buying from a website, I'll buy from it, because I don't know, they've got an SSL server, they've got a proper privacy policy, they've got their cookie, their EU cookie compliant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Tim?
I just wanted to, maybe ask a question or point something out, and that is that if, you know, before a privacy or proxy service could put in some sort of a note in a field or whatever, or even if there was a whole new field, you know, they first have to know that they're dealing with a commercial entity in the first place. And I think that's where everything starts, in my opinion, starts to fall apart, because all you can really do then is say, is require them to ask. And if they're told that, yes, I'm a commercial entity, then they can fill in this field, which really means, you know, that what's in this field is, you know, that the accuracy of what is or isn't in the field then is really brought into question, unless there's some way, you know, to confirm that that's done. And I thought that what we had talked about in the past was, you know, if we were going to go down that road, it would just be a sort of an after-the-fact thing that, you know, you would put in your terms and conditions perhaps somewhere that you can only use this domain for this, that, and the other thing, the way we do with other, you know, illegal activities and things. Because if you ask somebody, well, are you going to use this to, infringe on somebody's copyright, they're not going to say yeah. But if they do later and it's discovered, then you come to, you know, whoever's in authority, the registry, the registrar, to try to get the site taken down. So it'd be the same way here. If we were going to go down that road and say, well, you can't use a domain, a private domain for commercial services, it's only something that could really be accurately enforced after the fact. In other words, when someone discovers it's happening, then you report it to the privacy or proxy service, and they have to take some sort of action. So I think that, you know, going down this road of saying, well, there's got to be some field, then you've got to figure, well, now how do we validate what we put in that field? And, you know, we're just now starting to go down the road of who is validation and, in our normal who is through the new registry, the new RAA. And we've got problems with it, and it's not working exactly like everybody thought. And we don't even know if it is working. It seems a little premature, you know, to jump into this with the privacy and proxy services now, too, my opinion. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. I've got John next, and then Volker. John, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to briefly respond to what, and part of this cut out on my phone, so I apologize if I didn't quite hear it right, but I think Michaeli's points and some other points that people raised suggesting that, you know, Whois isn't really widely used, only, you know, a very tiny fraction of people use it. And, you know, certainly I would agree that the average internet user isn't, you know, looking at, you know, Whois when they visit a website. But I think it's really helpful to think of not only direct use, but derivative use as well. And certainly what we see is a couple of things. We do see some people that use Whois. And, you know, again, I think this is often in the what I would call the amateur abuse fighting space. I mean, these are not paid professionals, but people certainly in our field that, you know, sort of have as a hobby. I mean, people have all sorts of crazy hobbies. There are people that go out there and find spam websites, illegal internet pharmacies, illegal pornography websites, and so forth, who is an important tool. And I think that there is some benefit to that, internet users as a whole. And that's where some of the derivative use comes in. And let me use, I think I've mentioned before to the group, one of our clients is Visa, the credit card network company. And, you know, I was just talking to them yesterday about some websites, and having accurate and transparent who is a really, really critical thing for companies like Visa to have to do the evaluation of a potentially illicit merchant. And so in that sense, I think that there is derivative use that's important to understand. That you know, one company that is serving you know a whole bunch of different other companies and individuals may use who is in ways that the downstream users don't even know. But you know, we see a fair amount of that. So I you know, and the final point I'd make is we don't know what new tools can be developed over the next 4 to 5 years. The internet grows so fast. That I would just hate to stymie any you know potential innovation that some company or some individual might come up with based on who is data that's really you know creative and interesting. So I'll just stop there, but wanted to push back on that concept a little bit.
Okay, thank you, John. Let me just ask people if we could to focus on C3. I think there's some good points being made here on the more general question of how who is being used, but we're looking right now at this particular question. So Volker and then James.
Well, one of the points that Kathy was making, I think, also chimes in with what Tim was saying. First of all, the privacy service provider needs to know what his customer is and not be lied to. That's one thing that is a problem here. And the other thing is the customer also needs to know what he's going to be doing in the domain name with the domain name. And as Kathy has pointed out, there's many, many different ways that one might use a domain name. And a registrant may say, okay, I'm only using that domain name 10% for commercial purposes and 90% for private purposes, so it's a private domain name. And this would have to be very, very closely defined, and I see that this will creating such a category that would have to be output in some form creates a lot of problems, tag-along problems that we would also have to serve, and that would maybe not be the best investment of our time in the long run.
Okay, James, and then I'm assuming that Tim and John are old hands, but if not, you can get back in the queue. But James, go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. James speaking for the transcript. Just a couple of points here, and I know you don't want us to beat up on who is. I just wanted to point out that we really don't have to engage in a whole lot of speculation and conjecture here. The Who Is review team actually did a study on this back in 2010, and we've got some really sort of amusing videos about how what sort of ways people would casual and even somewhat tech savvy users would use to determine who is behind a website or a domain name. So, I would just point the group and perhaps point staff to the idea that that is out there. That is part of ICANN's body of work. We should maybe consult that in trying to wrestle with this question. And then to go back to something Tim was saying and something Volker was saying, I think I want to agree with that and perhaps just emphasize for the group that when a person registers a domain name, sometimes they do so, you know, in a heat of passion. You know, they have a business idea or they have a website idea or they have something or a product that they want to see. And, I'm guilty of this myself, so I'll register a website and I'll put the registrant, because we are required to collect an organizational field, and I'll collect the field and I'll put in Jimco or something like that. Not really because it's representing a commercial entity, but it's more of an aspirational response to how I see this idea playing out. And then, unfortunately, sometimes those registrants come back later and find that they have difficulty transferring a name or that other products and services may not be available to them because they've declared themselves now to be a non-natural person as a registrant. And so I think that, you know, this is a challenging thing to not only to get them to tell the truth when they respond here. It is somewhat on the honor system or on a reactive policing mode, but also to make sure that it's completely understood by the registrant that this covers their future intentions as well, and they may have to change that declaration, you know, if their intentions change or if their uses change over time. So I just wanted to get those two points into the conversation. Thanks.
Okay. Kieran on C3.
Hi. Yeah, this is Kieran. I just wanted to respond to what Volker and I guess also what Kathy said about C3 and uses changing and evolving. I really don't understand why that's such a big deal, because if I move apartments or condos or cities or whatever, I have to update my who is contact information. So if you change the purpose at which you're using your website, you would be expected to change your declaration. I don't see that as an impossible task. I also don't really think that the question of what percentage of your website is used for commercial purposes matters either, because if you're, you know, our position at any rate is that if you're using it for commercial purposes in any way, and that, of course, has to be defined more clearly to, you know, include and think about, you know, what that means, donation links and, you know, and advertising and things like that. But if you're using it as we determine what commercial means in any way, then you would be required to tell us who you are. You know, consumers largely have the right to understand who they're giving money to and who they're buying goods and services from. So, that was just kind of a response to Volker and Kathy. I hope it's on message. Thanks.
Okay, let me just add, I see we have two more people in the queue, but let me just see if we can come to make any progress on C3. I'm hearing a lot of people say the answer to this question should be no. So I guess I'm asking, and again, I'm focusing here on the area where I think there's the greater level of agreement, which is that someone other than a natural person should not be barred from using privacy and proxy services. So let's just take that case where a legal entity uses a privacy or proxy service. If you think that is acceptable, is there anybody who thinks there should be a difference in what data is displayed? So I would encourage anybody who thinks the answer to that question should be yes to step forward and explain what you think the difference should be. Again, so if you have a legal entity using a privacy or proxy service, and you may think that they should never be allowed to use it, in which case I'm not directing this question to you. But if you think there are circumstances in which they should be allowed to use it, but you think there should be a difference in the data field to be displayed compared to if a natural person is using it, then please step forward. Volker, your hand was up before, so I'm not assuming your answer is yes, but please go ahead.
Basically, yes. My answer to that would be no, but on spot, I would ask to give me some more time to explain that position a bit more in detail on the mailing list. I just wanted to respond to Kieran's request why I think that there's good reasons not to have that designation having to change that designation. For example, I own a couple of domain names which bear my name, my family name, and I use privacy services because I do not want my private address to be publicly available in the Whois. Now, if I, Volker Greimann, decided to open a company in my name, which also bears my name, Greimann and Sons, Greimann Incorporated, whatever, and I wanted to use that domain name for that company but still retain ownership of that company, would I then be required to publish my private name or transfer the domain name to my company? I want to have those separate. Would I not be able to do that anymore? I think there's sufficient reasons why we should be able to recognize that there's multiple uses of a domain name, and The uranium that was registered for private and private and non-commercial use can be continued to be used that way, even if I also use it for commercial purposes at a later time. Domains are multi-use, and ownership can be a difficult thing to determine, and sometimes it makes sense to have that distinction out there. So having to force me to decide commercial use in the whois, and then maybe later be forced when my company goes belly up to return to hand my domain name to a third party may not be what I desire, and that might be a consequence, because the whois is evidencing the ownership of the domain name, and if I put commercial in there or a commercial owner in there, then it might be taken as evidence that this domain name belonged to the company that went belly up and has to be turned in for some purpose.
Okay, thank you. Tim, is that a new hand, I think?
Yeah, I've already said in the chat, of course, no, I don't think we should make a distinction. And just another example that I wanted to point out here that we would be causing a problem for, and that is the plethora of small businesses and mom and pops, at least in the U.S., and I think in most of the rest of the world, that's really the backbone of the economies of these countries. And because, for a small business that may be operating out of their home, they may want to be using their home address and personal contact information for this domain name, and they want to keep that private. But that may not necessarily be the contact number and mailing address, et cetera, that they're using for their business, and that may be something completely different on their website. So they're not trying to hide or to, abscond with their customers' funds clandestinely or anything. They just have different contact information for different purposes, and they want to keep it that way. And so there may be a perfectly legitimate way to contact them and their business from the information that they provide online, but that may be completely different than what they want to provide to their hosting provider or to their domain name registrar, and so they want to keep that information private. And so they're using a privacy or proxy service. So if we go down this road, then what we're doing is we're making it difficult for, the vast majority of small businesses and mom and pops that, are using these services already, because in many cases, that's why they're using it. And I think that's, again, something we haven't talked about today, and that is that, if we go down this road, we've got, a huge problem with how do we go and tell all these current commercial entities that are using these private and proxy services now that they can no longer do so, and what kind of havoc that's going to create for them. So that's something we need to consider as well. Thanks.
Okay, Michele, and then we're going to wrap up on this question.
I'm just going to pick up a little bit of what Tim was getting at. I mean, as a registrar, we send out thousands of emails every month, hundreds of thousands probably, and I imagine larger registrars are sending out millions. We send out emails for domain name renewals. We send them out for a bunch of other things. And I look at, the stuff that comes into us, the responses we get from people. So this entire thing about, asking people to reclassify what they're using a domain name for, I can't see it being effective. Now, I can see, sure, a big corporate that is probably spending thousands, if not more, hundreds of thousands of euro per annum on digital might have the knowledge, might have the skills, might have the interest in doing those kind of things. But I mean, even when we tell our customers that, please make sure that you've updated your email address because random free email provider has gone out of business, we still discover that months later, hundreds of them haven't updated, and everything is expiring because they're ignoring the emails we're trying to send them. So I just, I'd be very wary of the impact that something like this could have if you want to make it obligatory. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, on C3, let's take it to the list. I'm going to put out this question that I asked to see if anybody has a different answer to it. Otherwise, I think the answer to this question 3 is going to be no, but we will circulate that on the list. Our final agenda item, we just have a couple of minutes, is D1, which is what measures should be taken to ensure contactability and responsiveness of the providers. We did have some good discussion about this, I think on the last call, or maybe it was 2 calls ago, but in any case, recently. And that's reflected it's in this box under working group response discussion on about the 3rd page about requiring a public register of accredited providers and what remedies should exist for inaccuracy, and then the requirement to respond. So I would welcome any further comments on either of these. I think James posted some information about the TAC system in the IRTP category, Transfer Emergency Action Contact. I'm not sure that that's a useful model in a sense, because that seems to be focused solely on issues where there needs to be an immediate response. Whereas I think my sense is that in this case, the queries to which that might be directed to these providers, some of them might require an immediate response, but some of them might not. So there could be a something of a range there. So I'm not sure whether that's a useful model, but I'm glad to hear other views on that. And I think everyone can scroll down. If you see on page 3 and 4, the little summary in green, this is in green on my screen, of what was said before about this, I'd welcome any further thoughts either on a public registry of accredited providers with contact information, again, similar to what we have now for registrars, and about the requirement to respond. So are there any comments on either of those points? Michaeli, anybody else want to be in the queue on this? Michaeli, go ahead.
I mean, if we end up with accredited providers, then having a full list of the accredited providers somewhere with their contact details seems completely reasonable and logical to me. I don't have any issue with that. With respect to the entire responsiveness angle, again, I don't have any issue with that. The key thing, I've always thought that, responsiveness is not the same thing as, anything beyond that. I mean, I can respond to something, and I will have to respond to certain things, but that doesn't mean I have to take action or anything like that. Just responding, there's no reason why that can't be an obligatory thing. So, yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay. Any other comments on this? Let me just pick up on James's point in the chat here about homework regarding transfers and other transactions. I think it was James and Kathy formed a little subgroup and came back with some material on that that's been circulated, and we have not actually discuss that. So maybe we need to look at that if there's discussion that's needed on that. Again, I'm not sure that was changing the answers or supplementing what we've done back in Section B of our questions, but I think let's take a look at that and see if there's something that we need to discuss. Unless James or Kathy, you're welcome to speak. Oh, in fact, both of you have your hands up, so go ahead, James.
Well, I can defer to Kathy. I just wanted to say, at least having an opportunity to present that to the group, those materials that we came up with, I think they are more structured as questions for further discussion, and something that we could look at. I don't think that we necessarily, or at least not on every point, did we come back with a fully baked answer. It's more of here are the issues that we need to consider when presenting this this topic, particularly around transfers. So, and I'll defer to Kathy, but I think we do want an opportunity to at least go through those laws.
Okay, I point well taken. Kathy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, actually, well, first, I agree with James. We'd love to present and we think it's structured and it will be an efficient and fast discussion, but an important one. But actually, I wanted to talk about very, very briefly about Category C question one. And now that I've had a chance to read the green, just to add.
You mean D1, you mean?
D1, sorry. Okay. This is, right, this is the contact point, right? Right, Steve?
Yeah.
Contact point? And just to add something, as I had been thinking about this question, which I was hoping we'd talk about more today, actually, contact points should also be for users, not just for those making inquiries into the user, but also for the users. So I just wanted to point that out, that right now I deal with a lot of registrants who get very confused, even though it's their own proxy privacy service, but they're, you know, they're buying and selling domain names, or they're transferring domain names, or their companies are being bought, often very small businesses. And so that the point of contact, I just thought we should add a bullet point, might also be for the registrants themselves or for the customers of the proxy privacy service. To make every, you know, to facilitate whatever questions they have. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't think that, that what we had there excluded that, but let's, we could clarify that. So let me ask Marika, I think you have the last word here before we adjourn.
Yeah, this is Marika. And just to notice, as people start thinking about, you know, this question, and, you know, Michaela hinted that, you know, there may need to be, or and that may be agreement to have a requirement for response, I think it would be really helpful as well if the working group can think a little bit more through the details of that. You know, would an automatic email response, does that qualify as a response? Is there any kind of specific time frame that would need to be associated with it? I'm already thinking ahead a bit of, you know, as we move towards implementation at some point, it would be really good to have a bit of guidance around, you know, what the working group is thinking in relation to those issues. So maybe just some homework for next week.
Okay. Great. Well, we're slightly over time, but we did get started a little bit late due to our slowness in getting the bridge going. So I want to thank everybody for their participation. Let me just summarize briefly. I think we very much want people to give their input to the draft that Don circulated. If you think there are wording that should be changed there or deleted, please spell that out on the list. On C3, similarly, we will reformulate this question, but I think there's a pretty strong answer on C3 for those to whom that question applies. And then on D1, we'll reflect the additional points that were brought up here, and perhaps we can push on in our next call. So please watch for those on the list. Please use the list, and we thank everybody for their participation today.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.